ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Cost of living issues that many Australians are facing also being felt acutely when it comes to property. Rents are extremely tight in most markets. The latest Anglicare rental affordability data was out today. Anglicare's Chief Executive for Australia, Casey Chambers, said, quote, the housing crisis is the worst it's ever been, and that it's not, that's not hyperbole. It is Australia's new normal. Now, the survey concluded that rental affordability has halved for a single person in the last 2 years. And even couples with both partners working full-time are locked out of nearly 90% of rentals. Think about it. If you've both got a job, you still can't rent. If you're looking to buy to escape rent, well, you need to be earning a lot and with two incomes to be able to buy anything, barely basic, at least in the big cities and surrounds. Bruce Carr is an independent mortgage broker. He's been on the program before. He's principal of Loanscape, established the firm to assist people in taking control over the process of borrowing money and managing debt to achieve their goals. He's with us again tonight. Now, Bruce can discuss affordability, lenders and borrowing, repayment strategies and what to consider if you want to buy a property. So, Bruce, good evening to you and welcome back to Nightlife.
Good evening, Philip, and good evening to your listeners.
Yeah, great to have you with us. Also with us is Alice Stoltz. Alice is the Domain National Property Editor. You might have seen her on TV, notably The Block. She knows the national market hotspots and what you can do to maximise the appeal of a property you might want to sell and what to look for if you're buying too. Alice, good evening to you and welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening, Phil. Great to be with you.
It's great. Fantastic to have both of you with us. Bruce, first to you, how much has affordability changed over the last year or so?
A lot. I mean, I've been tracking it for about the past 5 years. It peaked during the COVID times when interest rates were at their lowest and regulation was relatively weak. Peaked about October 21 and it's declined steadily since then. To give you an example, a couple earning a combined income of $120,000 in January 2022, no children, no help debt or anything like that, could borrow up to $787,000. That same couple today can borrow $539,000.
Well, you can't buy anything for $539,000, can you?
Well, then you've got the deposit and all that sort of thing. It depends where you're looking, of course, as well.
You've noticed a shift in the demographic of borrowers. What have you seen?
Okay, I'll answer that a different way. If you look at the average loan size across the country, that's $624,000 in the last quarter of last year. To qualify, and that's, I mean, it's 20% higher in New South Wales and above $500,000 in all states. A couple with no children, no other loans, or you know, HECS debt or anything, need a combined income of $142,000 per annum to take out that average loan. In New South Wales, that figure is $169,000.
And their combined income of
$160,000. Combined income, yeah. So what we're seeing is double graduates not being able to buy an apartment close to the CBD in Sydney.
I mean, that's if both people have got a job, they're graduates, they've put themselves in the property market, they're kind of premium earners in that sense in the market.
Well, relatively so,
relatively speaking.
Yeah.
They simply don't have the borrowing capacity to buy anything.
No. So they're having to do other things. They're looking further out. They're sometimes abandoning the idea altogether and looking to purchase interstate, for example, putting pressure on those, more pressure on those markets. What else are they doing?
In a way, you don't want people to borrow to the max anyway, do you?
No, but they're more inclined to do so at the moment.
To the max, you're kind of overextending yourself, aren't you?
Well, you're fully extending yourself.
Yeah.
But what happens if something goes wrong, like you need a big car repair or something like that? You've got less slack to play with. Remembering that when you're borrowing money, there is a safety factor, if you like, of 3% on the interest rate. So there is
This is
some
what
spare
the,
cash flow.
This is
there.
What the lending authority is enforcing on you. You mean
on the banks? Yes.
Yeah. Because they're saying they're stress testing you on this and saying, look, you know, could you afford more if interest rates go up? In other words.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Alice, to you, some new demand figures out this week as to what's happening in various markets. But what are you seeing in the market? Are people shifting out of expensive markets, moving to where they can afford? Mind you, what can they afford?
Look, it's certainly really tough for so many people in all of the property market at the moment. What Bruce is alluding to there, though, this idea of this lack of what people can borrow is really putting pressures on all facets of the market. And what I mean by that is, you know, Aussie young Australians today, it's never been longer or harder to buy a home than what it is today. So what the knock-on effect is, that then puts extra pressure on the rental market. And we have people in the rental market who, you know, 20 or 30 years ago would have been able to buy their own home and got out of that market sooner. And you can see that downward pressure just keeps putting more and more, you know, it just tightens that market to the state we've got a 0.7% vacancy rate around Australia at the moment. And, you know, a normal vacancy rate is around 3%.
Mm-hmm.
So our rental market in all states and nationally is completely imbalanced and not at all healthy if you're a renter. And the challenge with that is it's putting pressure on rental prices, which means those who are trying to save for a home are just locked out of that because they're paying more in rent. So the challenge is that I think it's just affecting so many different people and demographics and age groups that there really isn't anyone immune from it in many ways. It's very challenging. On a positive, though, what some people are doing is making lifestyle decisions, usually driven by affordability, and saying, I'm going to take this opportunity to go further out, to downsize my property, to give up having a bigger house, and thinking maybe I could live in a more oversized apartment than a standalone house. So I think that notion of what we want from housing is actually changing a bit. You know, that sort of evolution of the great Australian dream, I suppose.
Mm.
We're changing what we desire because we're forced to. But, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, I think, that if we are sort of cutting our cloth to the market that we're in, I suppose.
Yeah. Have people basically given up, do you think, Alice, young people in particular?
I think young people are feeling very despondent.
Yeah.
And I think, as Bruce said then, you've got graduates who are on good salaries, who have, you know, done all the right things. They've worked hard, they've put energy into their education or got a trade, and they're living at home with their parents, and they therefore can't, they're not ready to start a family. Like, you know, and this is having a huge effect on who we are as people. You know, having a sense of place and a home is a crucial part of our life. So I think I really, really feel for young people at the moment.
Mm. G'day, Vicky.
Hi, how are you?
Not bad.
Just finished work. I was just wondering, my husband and I own our home, mm-hmm. and we're just thinking about buying a home for our daughter at the moment, her children, but we're turning 60, so we have a lot of deposit, but is it better to put the deposit in her account, or how much are we allowed to borrow? I'm just not sure what we're allowed to do anymore, being over 60, because the working rate is only, 67 or something.
Bruce, if you're over 60, what can you borrow?
Well, you can borrow, put simply, you can borrow as much as that you can repay over the term that
the
you're
loan.
Planning to work.
Yeah.
So if you're planning to work another 10 years, you
mm-hmm.
can borrow another 10 years. You can borrow an amount that you could repay over 10 years, or if at the end of 10 years you get a 20-year loan, and at 10 years the balance will be, you know, roughly 60%, say, of what you originally borrowed, do you have enough other assets to pay out the loan from those assets, whether it be super or you know, downsizing your own home or whatever. But you've got to have a plan for yourself, let alone a plan for the bank. You've got to know how you're going to come out the other side of this and provide for your own potentially long retirement.
Yeah, we won't have anything.
Yeah, well then.
Yeah, we're giving it all to her.
Yeah, well, you need to get, it's more than a mortgage broker will assist you, you need to get financial advice about that sort of thing as well.
Because you don't want to leave yourself stranded, Vicky, that's I think what Bruce is saying, is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, but I have a daughter and grandkids.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, it depends on what your daughter can, I mean, I'm a parent too, I've got two children in there. Late 20s, so I know that I'm living this problem as well, and it's not easy to help them because the other thing they've got to be able to do is hopefully be able to borrow money in their own right, so that the assistance you're giving is just getting them up that rung the ladder. The Bank of Mum and Dad is still the ninth largest lender in the country.
Mm. I was just about to add to that. The Bank of Mum and Dad is just fast on the rise to being one of the biggest lenders in Australia now. And I think the cautionary tale for parents, though, is to understand that they need to hold on to maintain their own asset because what we also see is this sort of transference of intergenerational wealth as families move along. And if parents don't have anything themselves and they're giving it to their children, that also has a knock-on effect of just end up jeopardising many other people. So it has to be done very cautiously. But I think the sentiment's very generous, Vicky, but I think it can be a very complex situation.
Okay, because I was, I was thinking about buying her a house, me and my husband, and then letting her pay some of the mortgage off. But then I have other children as well. So,
exactly,
you know,
Also, I mean, she might be paying the mortgage back to you, but it depends who took the mortgage out, Vicky, doesn't it, Bruce?
Yeah.
As to who's legally liable here.
Oh, yes. I mean, if Vicky wants to borrow money, then the story that the bank's interested in is how you're going to repay the loan.
Yeah.
But if you've got other children, you've also got to, if you say, I can help, child A with this, you've got to be able to give the same answer to child B when they ask as well. Typically,
they won't. Yeah. All right, Vicky. I better get home.
Yep.
I've been just finished work.
Good on you, Vicky.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
Good evening. 1-300-800-222. Lines are free if you want to grab one. We're talking with Bruce Carr, independent mortgage broker, principal of Loanscape. Bruce can talk about loan options, mortgages, how you should structure them, how much you can borrow, all that stuff. Alice Stoltz is with us as well, Domain's National Property Editor. Who's buying all the houses and who's lending the money then, Bruce, if no one can actually afford to buy anything?
Look, that's interesting. There's what I'm learning, and I'll be interested to know what Alice has seen, but there's been a bit of a hollowing out.
Hmm.
So when I looked at the data, I thought, well, the thing we're going to see is that the number of first home buyers has fallen,
yeah.
But it hasn't.
Really?
No, it hasn't.
Say that again. So
as a percentage of mortgage borrowers in the market, it's at around 17-18%, which is
what it's always historically been.
It's sort of its long-term average.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah.
Are you astonished by that?
Oh, yes, because I was expecting the opposite.
Yeah.
But that's probably due to a couple of things. The hollowing out I was referring to is the next group up, the sort of the upgraders and so on, they're staying put. They can't borrow enough money to make a significant difference to their dwelling.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be doing things like what Alice is interested in is renovating or, improving the place they're in maybe. And first home buyers, I think there's been an acceleration because of this rental crisis. I know that a lot of renters have brought their purchase decision forward, helped in many cases by the First Home Guarantee Scheme,
mm-hmm.
which is yet another government scheme aimed at boosting demand rather than the supply of housing. And really, it's well-intentioned, but it actually exacerbates the problem.
Are you surprised by that, Alice, that the percentage of first home buyers hasn't fallen, that it's about its long-term average, 17 or 18% of the market?
No, because of that tight rental market, people who can buy or make a compromise on what they can buy. Yeah. So maybe that first home buyer thought, I want to, you know, have a two-bedroom home with a little picket fence. And now because they can't get a rental and they can't afford that property with a two-bedroom house with a picket fence, they're now compromising and perhaps buying a one-bedroom unit because they're so desperate. You know, yeah. I think this notion for ownership and home ownership is so... We're so fiercely attached to it that I think people will do anything for it in many respects. And I also know that, you know, many first home buyers were sort of wobbled through that COVID period, that they weren't sure what was happening. They saw prices go up and up and up. And that really was a catalyst for many of them to think, basically it was FOMO pushing a lot of them into thinking, I can't not get on this merry-go-round. So I think many people have gone to extraordinary lengths, multiple jobs, living at home in their 30s to save a deposit. So we also know that that first home buyer ownership age has also got older and older and older. Yep. And that's obviously no surprise, but I do think that's probably the caveat around what age are people buying their first home at and how much that has stretched out from what it was, you know, 20 years ago.
Mm. Yep. Sorry, Bruce.
Just add to that. The other data that I've seen accumulated by PEXA in the eastern states of Australia last year, 28.5% of property purchases were made without a mortgage.
Yeah, wasn't that extraordinary? That
hang on, what a third, nearly a third,
nearly a third. Mm. Yeah,
of people just had the cash.
Yes.
Now, where on earth from?
Well, either they're wealthy. Another large cohort.
A third of Australians are not wealthy. No,
another large cohort of the downsizers.
Right.
So they're selling at a higher price and paying cash with the proceeds of the sale.
Right.
But they're all people participating in the market and driving the property prices.
Mm. But also we've seen prices go up 40% in some states and points over the past decade. So I think it just goes to show the underlying strength of the market. Some people have just made extraordinary gains through property, which is why it's become this sort of wealth-building asset, not necessarily just shelter for people, which is partly why we're in the problem that we're in today.
Right. Yeah, 1-300-800-222 is the number if you'd like to call. Brady is on the line from Emerald. G'day, Brady. Hi, Brady. G'day, Brady.
How are we tonight?
Not too bad.
So I have a question. I have a Part 9 debt agreement. Is it still possible for me to get a home loan?
Look, the short answer is I can't give you specific advice. But the short answer is yes. To a certain extent, but it might be expensive and you might have to have a much larger deposit than a borrower who isn't in that situation.
Right,
yeah.
So I know I can't get a personal loan or anything like that, but I was just wondering if it was still possible for me to get like a home loan.
It may be, but as I said, you'd have to know the specifics of the case. Your best option is to ask a friend
but it's
for
not
a name.
He's not precluded from it. There's no reason why he couldn't. Sorry, there are maybe reasons why he couldn't get one, but he's not precluded just simply by the existence of the Part 9 debt agreement.
No.
Okay. Mm. Well, there you go, Brady. Yes, in theory you can, but obviously it's going to be dependent on your personal circumstances.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Brady. Thank you. Bye-bye. 1-300-800-222 is the number. G says, I'm one of those professionals with no debt and no hex. I'm on about $120,000 a year. Cost of living and rent destroyed my savings and I'm putting much away. I do have more than $100,000 in my super. It seems like robbing Peter to pay Paul, but should I think about removing some cash from super to pay for a deposit? You can't do this, can you?
You can't. No, I mean, I'm not an expert on super, but... basically, you can't take your money out of super
for a house deposit
for any purpose, other than when you're
short of in extremis,
which you know, extreme financial hardship sort of thing. There is the option to, but you've got to set up a specific account to do it, to save through super, and then draw that back out. But it's that's money you're saving in super rather than the bank.
Mm.
Yeah.
Alice, do you think, I mean, we're in the midst of this, what you say, great rise in property prices, but to some degree it's always been the case, hasn't it? Particularly in the big urban centres, people have always made money out of investing in property and have always downsized. I mean, is there something that's so new about what we're facing at the moment, or has this just always happened?
Look, I think there's... I think we have a few factors at play, I suppose. We know that the introduction of negative gearing and capital gains tax made a huge change to how people saw property and perceived property.
This was in the first decade of this century. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. So we know that made a big difference. So that's partly that, and that's when I think we started hearing more and more about people with multiple properties and really building serious wealth through property. But we also need to be mindful of just how much our population is growing. And we know how much we need that. Like we look at the moment with this issue around supply at the moment is largely from the fact that we don't have enough people to, you know, get those shovels in grounds and build housing partly. So our population is growing. We've had big migration intakes, which the country is needed. But I think we just haven't had that in lockstep with supply and demand has not been in lockstep, which is part of the challenge that we're experiencing here. Because the problem today is a lot more profound than what it was, you know, 30, 40 years ago, without a doubt. Mm. Because we've also had a meteoric, you know, growth of those house prices. It used to sort of, you know, was sort of single-digit multiples of incomes, and now it's often eight times that. So it is definitely night and day compared to what it was decades ago.
Yeah. Do we think that this is going to right itself once the Bank of Mum and Dad has exhausted its funds? In other words, if this generational transfer of wealth, Bruce, is happening right now, which it is, and you're saying people are paying cash for, downsizers are paying just paying cash for properties, this all has to come to an end at some point.
Yes, but underpinning that is the assumption that a family has got wealth.
Mm.
If a family hasn't got accumulated wealth, there's no wealth to transfer.
Mm.
I think the sad thing about it is that we're having this world of we have the have and the have-nots. And, you know, the other day someone remarked that Sydney may well become a city without grandchildren. And this idea that it's going to become smaller and smaller, the people who do have that housing and are passing it down to families. And that for me is the greatest risk here, that it's really going to change the sort of shape of how we live and the way that families, you know, exist in housing.
Mm. Well, you've seen it in some European cities, I mean, many European cities, actually, that's right, that the centre part of the cities, that is what some people might say are the more centrally located places, no one can live anymore. They're all owned by investors and are rented out. People, young families in particular, simply live elsewhere.
We are very much on that path.
On that path.
Yeah. I mean, look, in the last 20 years, house prices have gone up 150%.
Mm.
Wages have gone up 82%.
There you go. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Let's welcome others to the program. Bruce Carr is with us, independent mortgage broker and principal of Loanscape, and Alice Stoltz is with us, Domain's national property editor as well. Let's welcome some other listeners to get to our national audience.
This is Nightlife with Phil Clark
on ABC Radio.
Yes, please join us. We're talking about the autumn property market. Bruce Carr's with us, independent mortgage broker. Alice Stoltz is with us, the national property editor for Domain. And we're talking about the numbers and what you can borrow, what you can't borrow, ways to borrow it, what's hot and what's not, and all of these questions. If you've got queries yourself, please. 1-300-800-222 is the number. You can text questions on 0467-922-702. Beck from Kelmscott. G'day, Beck.
Hi. How are you going?
Not bad. What's your question?
Okay, there's a bit of a backstory. So my son started building a house when the house and land package, you know, first home buyers thing come out during the beginning of the COVID period. And 4 years on almost, he still has no house, only a pad down, because the builder went into liquidation. My question is, I guess, because we're trying to get this sorted, although having great troubles doing so.
Mm.
Is he going to be up for more of a mortgage, or is he at risk of like losing what he's actually put into it himself? Because he'd saved around 30 grand himself, which has gone into it. He's paying part mortgage because only a pad has gone down. Paying part mortgage, paying a hex debt. You know, I'm not in the position to be one of these parents that goes buys my kids housing. I'm, you know, paying a mortgage myself. I've been a single parent, raised two amazing kids, and now, you know, it looks like what the lady was saying before, there aren't going to be grandchildren for me.
Bruce?
It's really difficult to answer your question, Beck, because you need to know the detail. I would need to know the specific details of the situation.
Yeah.
It can be difficult to borrow, or more difficult to borrow money against half-completed dwellings, but it sounds to me like there's not much more than the land there. Your son needs to start with, you know, finding a mortgage broker who might be able to help them understand their borrowing capacity and their ability to get a loan at all.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like there's some legal questions there, although even though he might be in a legally strong position, there may not be any money
to pursue.
Yeah. Look, construction's been a nightmare over the last few years.
It's been terrible, obviously. So, like, I'm just thinking he's potentially, because it's going to cost more now, isn't it, than what was originally quoted?
Very likely, because materials costs have gone through the roof. I don't know a single residential construction project that hasn't gone over time and over budget since the start of COVID. That's just how it's been.
So. All right. Thank you for your help.
No worries, Beck. Exactly. No worries, Beck. Yeah. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Kathy in Berry. G'day, Kathy. Lines are free if you want to grab one, by the way. 1-300-800-222. G'day, Kathy.
Hi. How are you?
Pretty good. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. The reason I was just calling, there's a couple things I'm wondering. We do seem to have a terrible, terrible shortage of housing.
Mm-hmm.
Why won't the councils let us, if we have land, why won't they let us put tiny homes or modular homes on there for, say, 10 people, so 10 different, say over 55, especially a lot of single women need this kind of housing. I don't understand why the council's so resistant to us trying to do something like that.
When you're talking about tiny homes, you're talking about these tiny homes that are basically on, they're basically oversized caravans, aren't they?
Well, that or just modular type homes where, say, two bedroom, one bath, a decent sized kitchen, that kind of thing.
Mm.
It's a great question, Kathy, and thank you for raising it, because effectively, in my mind, the answer goes back to the fact that in Australia at the moment, we don't have all levels of government working together. With federal are doing one thing, state are doing another, local are doing the other. And a lot of that is fueled by also this sort of fuel that's being added to the fire is what is called these NIMBYs, not in my backyard.
Mm.
And that movement of people who just say, well, yes, we need to solve this problem. Yes, I want my child to be able to have a house or whatnot, but I don't want to have that next door to me, you know. And I think until we all acknowledge how bad and severe this crisis is, we're not going to evolve from it, because what you're suggesting is actually, it is going to be solutions like that that help dig us out of this hole, and we're all going to have to make a bit of a sacrifice, you know what I mean?
Well, there's enough of these type of businesses. This would not be, this is more of a interested in helping people more than it's making a profit. But but there's lots of places out there right now, over 55, making a profit by people buying that sort of thing. We've got a couple of them in Barrie there.
Mm.
And the arbor, you know, a few different things. And they're just small houses that, have got small yards. They're beautiful and they're neat, and but they're very close together. And these everybody seems to be pretty happy with it, though.
Yep, but look, I'd question, is this a fix or a solution? Because it comes down to the kind of society we want to build for ourselves. And is that what we're really aspiring to?
Well, when it's not... let me just interrupt this and say that I have a lot of girlfriends that they're all doing pretty well, but they're all getting older, and there's going to come a time when they can't keep up with maintaining their own houses or maintaining their own places. And why not have sort of, I'm not calling it a commune, but something where all of us can be in, you know, a large area, but separate enough to be private, but close enough to be together.
And
I don't
Kathy,
understand
I think
why
the,
we can't do that.
I think the other benefit about that, Kathy, is also going back to this idea of community. Like, we know how enriched everybody's lives are when we have stronger communities around us. And that's something that did really sort of fall by the wayside at times in COVID. You know, part of the rental crisis happened because everybody wanted to have more space and live alone or, you know, whatnot. And that was what sort of helped get us to where we are today with that. So this idea, I think, of coming back together, assisting people and living closer together and living in smaller footprints and that is one way of contributing to that. And Bruce, I take your point about saying, is that a fix or a solution? But I do think we have alarming rates of rising homelessness. We have, you know, single parents living in cars at times, we hear across media at the moment. So I think in part the problem is so acute and so severe that ideas like these sort of quick to build houses or adapting more granny flats and pods and studios around places is actually kind of what's needed, even if it is a fix to get us to the solution.
Look, it's a very complex problem. I mean, because the other elephant in the room is the size of the immigration intake at the moment. Right. We're importing more people than our capacity to build houses. So while we're doing that, we're just making the problem worse. And we can be lazy as a society and not debate these things properly, where fixes end up becoming the solution. And really, we should be deciding these things, Kath, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, I like your idea, but it's not the whole. It's not the whole answer.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. Thanks for the call. Phil says, if the supply of housing is lacking, just mitigate the demand. We're unwilling victims of growth by sheer influx of population. Curb it, at least until catch-up mode. Well, yeah, I mean, we probably should be doing this. Unfortunately, on these major things, governments are not really speaking, are they, Alice?
Well, no, and I think also when governments, you know, do big immigration intakes, we need a plan of how we're going to house people.
Where they're going to live.
Like, it sounds pretty logical, doesn't it? So I think, you know, people should be up in arms about the fact that there wasn't enough plans in place of how this was actually going to work. You know, I think it is. And as I said, I think, you know, young people should be marching the streets. We've got to this point today where they can't even get a house.
Yep, 1-300-800-222 is the number. Bindi from Shell Harbour. G'day, Bindi.
Hi, how you going?
Not bad.
So my question is, my partner and I would like to buy a house. At the moment, we'd like to stay in area, but it's 800 plus pretty much for Housing Commission house here. Our problem that we're facing is that he had already previously owned a house, whereas I have not. I want to know what our options are to get the best loan, I guess, that we could get without having the first home owner's grant.
Well, okay.
Because I'm assuming we wouldn't be able to be eligible for it.
Yeah, well, the grant these days presents most states as an exemption from stamp duty, which is a big until you've saved the stamp duty, you haven't started saving the deposit. So that's the issue. In terms of borrowing capacity, it has no effect. Your borrowing capacity
is the same.
Is the same, but your equity position is it might be the limiting factor in being able to complete the transaction.
Right, that makes sense.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Mindy. Bye-bye. Thank you for the call. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Steve in Glenray. G'day, Steve.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Just coupling in with the lady who spoke about modular homes.
Yep. Kathy, yeah.
Kathy, sorry about that. There's a lot of Crown land. The Crown is for the people. And I'm wondering where the barrier is on Crown land or...
Yeah, well, I don't know, Bruce. I mean, part of the problem with modular homes is what happens down the track with modular homes. Doesn't it? I mean, they all have to be connected to sewage in at some point. What's going to happen with all that infrastructure?
Oh, I mean, look, that sort of infrastructure exists. What you're talking about, too, is a problem presents and it takes governments at all levels time to respond. So, and again, you know, some of the most modest changes at various levels of government, there's always a lot of people who want to oppose them, and it's hard to get things done.
Mm. Yeah. Like the other month in Victoria, we just have now been allowed to do whatever we want with a granny flat in Victoria. Yep. It sounds archaic to think that. Originally, you know, it was just for granny, and if granny, you know, passed away, the flat technically had to then be decommissioned, and one couldn't rent it out, one couldn't put a teenager in there or anything, you know. And so to think it's 2024 and these things are just evolving now. So, again, we just need to keep pushing for change and absolutely harassing local government and state government about issues like that.
Alice, one of the great arguments has always been, why are people, you know, interested in staying in the big cities anyway? And the answer is usually jobs, because that's where jobs and education and everything else and also family are. Are you seeing, though, because there's anecdotal evidence of this, isn't there, a move to regional centres?
Absolutely, and we saw that that tree change, you know, dream become a reality for many people during the pandemic, and I think that really brought forward that desire to, you know, like just completely move out of the big smoke. And then we saw bosses sort of march people back to offices, and many people then did what we then coined the phrase of a reverse tree change.
Yep.
However, at the moment, that population leaving the cities is actually greater than those returning. And I think a lot of that is affordability. So I think what we're seeing now is those people who just think this is all too hard. I want to sort of start over, find that job. And because, you know, regional areas are so impacted by local economy, whether it's, you know, like if it's agricultural or mining, and that part of the economy is actually doing strongly at the moment. So there are the jobs there. And housing is still relatively more affordable than what it is in the city, and people get the lifestyle that goes with it. So we are definitely still seeing a desire for that, and particularly around like sort of satellite cities, like, or, you know, like Wollongong, or in Melbourne it might be Frankston or Geelong or something, and people are thinking, I can get to the city to go to the doctor once a week or whatnot, but I can actually have a more affordable and better quality of life if I go a little bit further out.
But see, like Geelong's an interesting example. House prices in Geelong jumped 40% during COVID.
Yep.
So if you went there during COVID early on, you did. But now if you have that idea now, it's that much harder to do.
That's right. And the challenge is that if you're trying to find that next area before it becomes hot, what we often call as a bridesmaid suburb or a bridesmaid region or town, those areas often don't yet have the infrastructure. And I think people, understandably, are questioning, well, how will I get to the city? And will I, does that mean I'll have to drive 4 hours or something, which is just not feasible, you know, regularly. So again, we need to ensure the planning is done to understand infrastructure and having hospitals and schools and whatnot built in those areas so people can have a decent quality of life there and make it a desirable place for them.
1-300-800-222 is the number. Gabrielle from Busselton. Sorry, Gab, you've been waiting on there. Hello.
Oh, that's okay. Hello. I have a little bit of a radical idea, but it just seems like we've got a situation where we have people without homes, and I've got six friends who all have a family home, and inside that family home is sitting a little old man or lady.
Mm-hmm.
Their partners are often in aged care, and these are very elderly people. And this little old man or lady is sitting in this home, and they are unable to clear out the clutter from their lives, but they are willing to move into a village situation, which will give them a much safer lifestyle in a much smaller environment. So you can just see the need here, where we've got beautiful big family homes available that are already built, and then we have this, and then we have willing people who want to move out of them, and then you have these families who need homes. So that's one matches the other. But the other thing is, in order for these elderly people to want to move, that's really important, is they need support in doing so. So they would, A, need a place to go, and B, need a removal company and a rubbish company and all those sorts of things to help them to go there. So it just means, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, when you have to think outside of a box to solve a problem. Well, we do have a lot of homes. I bet you there are probably well over 100 people sitting in Perth somewhere going, I would like to move out of my home, but I can't. I don't know how to. I need help to do so, and I need incentive because I need a place to actually go for my age group. So these people would all be available to go into an age, like over 55 sort of a situation.
It's, I mean, they're sensible ideas, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I'm questioning, doesn't it already exist? To me, you're describing a retirement village, which is a for-profit sector with, you know, controlled under state legislation.
Well, let's pretend it's me and I'm moving out of my home, but I'm 84 and I can't lift the boxes of books and the billiard table and all the bits and pieces.
You're saying you've just got no actual capacity to get yourself out of the house you're in.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I've actually got a friend who's just paid $5,000 just to clear a shed. It was five truckloads of rubbish for her partner. And that's just the shed. Now she's starting to go through each of the kitchen, the bedroom and the rest of it. Now, this lady would love to move, but number one in her way is the law. She cannot do anything with her home until her partner dies. And number two is her actual capability to come in there and clear it out financially as well as physically. She just can't do it. So, family, we'll go along and help her. But this is the third person I have spoken with, friends and family, about being in exactly that situation. These people want to move. They've got a perfectly good home that could become available to another family.
Mm-hmm.
But we just have to sort of like, it's like Tetris. You've got to move one thing to get the other one into that space.
Get what you're saying, Gabrielle.
Yeah.
Thank you. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Where are we? Ali from Berwick. G'day, Ali.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I'm just wondering, my husband and I are 53 and I'm due to get an inheritance from obviously my family.
Yep.
It's roughly about 500,000. We've been told that we're actually too old. Now, we live in a small flat with our two adult children.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been sort of told, are we too old at 53 to go for another mortgage or not? Or we can get a mortgage, or we end up having to give the kids the money to get them out of our flat so we can live quietly.
Bruce, what options?
Okay, you're not too old to get a mortgage, but it's like the conversation I have with a caller at the start of the show. You've got to be able to demonstrate to yourself, let alone the bank, that you've got a strategy to repay the mortgage before you cease earning, or by the time you cease earning income. Now, that strategy could be a superannuation pension, a lump sum, downsizing, what have you. But to put it in context, the anti-discrimination legislation applies to mortgages as it does to other areas of life, and a bank cannot discriminate against you on the basis of age, but they can on the basis of their duty of care to make sure you can afford to repay the loan that they're providing.
So So we would have to probably put up our current flat that we live in that we've got to...
Ali, you've got to repay the loan somehow. I mean, so how are you going to repay it? Is everyone working and got jobs?
Well, what we were sort of thinking was we could either leave our two adult children here to rent the flat.
Yeah.
Like, it's our flat. I think we only owe about another $25,000 on it. Get them to stay here. They could end up having it. We've got this $500,000.
And you could run, Ali.
We could run. That's exactly right. I'm actually saying to my husband, let's just get a motorhome and just go around Australia 100 times.
Do you know what? That's right. Pay off the mortgage. Say, this is the rent, kids, right? Leave a note on the kitchen table and, Ali, you're gone.
Yes, please feed the dog.
But look, don't dismiss the idea. You know, investigate it.
But Ali, the only other idea, Ali, is to do that idea of we're hearing a lot of people doing multi-generational housing these days where they get families sort of have three generations living together, you know, where you live there, you live with your kids, but you've got a bigger place. If they have children, that might happen as well. And this idea of these sort of families going back to that compound living, like what many people in Europe do.
Mm.
Another idea, if you feel like sort of having that tree or sea change, I guess.
Mm. Yep. Thanks, Ali. Good on you. Philippa makes a good point. She says, why does it have to be a retirement home? Why can't it just be downsizing when you want to move out? But the cost often isn't worth it. We live in a beautiful 3 to 4 bedroom home, but to downsize to an apartment, it would cost us too much to do it. So we probably stay put. But Bruce, this is the case, isn't it? I mean, often if you want to buy a new apartment, it's worth as much as a 3 bedroom house.
Not quite.
No, I'm exaggerating. Yeah. But I mean, it's not the massive saving that you think.
But also what you're dealing with is elderly people who, even people my age, you know, and I'm north of 60, everybody, even people my age don't necessarily think the same way an 80-year-old does or an 85-year-old. So your needs change quite dramatically over that period of your life.
One of the challenges with the downsizing issue also is that most downsizers want to downsize to the area that they're living in. And we don't have appropriate housing to catch those people, I guess.
I don't know. But of course people do, Alice. I mean, I'm often surprised when people are astonished by this. Of course you want to stay where you live.
You do. But the issue is a type of housing, like a single-level apartment or a lock-and-leave townhouse or something, is that available in your area you're living in? And often it's not.
Mm. Mm. Yes, indeed. All right. Look, we haven't solved the problem. There are solutions, but governments don't seem to be all that keen to enter upon them. But I do thank you for your time. Alice Stoltz is Domain's National Property Editor. Thanks, Alice.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Never build a swimming pool. Is that a good piece of advice, final advice, Alice?
No. People should not build it themselves, but I think pools add a lot of value. If you can do it, go for it.
Bruce Carr's an independent mortgage broker and principal of Loanscape. G'day, Bruce.
Thanks, Phil.
And thank you for your time as well. Thanks for the call. Sorry we couldn't get to everyone.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.